You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by my co-host in Chicago, Matt Fortuna. We're talking Notre Dame fan survey today. I don't think either of us have anything to say about the difference in academics between Notre Dame and Ohio State. Matt, I don't want to speak for you. Maybe you do.
Ohio's APR came out this week and Ohio State was higher. So clearly,
yeah,
we got our answer there.
Yep. That's. I don't know what other conclusions you can draw from that. I appreciated the Ohio State football account tweeting that out almost immediately after Marcus Freeman's comments about taking online classes at Ohio State, which I feel like a few years ago, Justin Fields was talking about how he actually had never really been on campus all that much when he was a student at Ohio State because he was just taking online classes the whole time. But perhaps it's neither here nor there. It adds another layer of fun and spice to Notre Dame Ohio State on September 3rd.
It does. I mean, look... I thought the whole ordeal was interesting. Like, it was unclear to me whether Marcus Freeman made these comments at the St. Louis Alumni Club to a group of fans or whether he said them directly to CBS. In any event, this was said on like May 19th or something, I think was when that event was,
yep.
Which got written about on June 10th and then aggregated into like digestible Twitter content
on June 10th, 2 minutes later.
On June 14th. No, yeah. It's like 4 days later. Hey, I mean, in the great debate about Notre Dame and Ohio State guy, let's quote a Michigan guy, Tom Brady. If you're explaining, you're losing. This is the second strike. Marcus Freeman has said, intentionally or unintentionally, at his alma mater, who he also happens to play against in his first full season game as a, right now, I think 14.5-point underdog. The game day signs will be interesting. Let's put it that way. However accurate or inaccurate they are, the Ohio State reaction, some of it was a lot of pearl clutching. Others of it, there was a player out there said, like, he remembered turning in a paper to Marcus Freeman when he interned in the athletic department there, which I thought was pretty funny. I think to your earlier point, yeah, Notre Dame's probably more challenging academically than Ohio State. I don't think that's like a hot take, and I haven't actually been in classes at either school, so who am I to say? But it's great off-season fodder, right? Like, I don't know how accurate it is.
Not,
I don't know how.
It's the perfect off-season fodder because we don't need to do like a anonymous sourced oral history like Jimbo Nick Saban style over it. We can just be like, it's a funny thing to retweet. Let's move on.
I mean, if you're Ryan Day right now, you've got Jim Harbaugh saying you were born on third base and for your last game of the year, and Marcus Freeman taking shots at your program for the first game of the year. Ohio State, as if they weren't already going to have a chip on their shoulder after the way last season ended, has plenty of fuel to the fire entering 2022.
It's a very, it seems to be a very aggrievable fan base if they do not waste an offense if they can find one. And I think Marcus just sort of fairly or unfairly served one up to them so they can chew on that for the next couple months.
I don't think this is a big deal at all. I mean, people take it as such because it's June. I do see why they got very upset with them over the Players Tribune article.
Yes.
And I think when you add them together, even if one's more quote-unquote egregious than the other, it's in Ohio State fans' mind a pattern of, hey, you're one of us and you keep taking shots at us. And oh, by the way, we got September 3rd circled. But, you know, Jim Harbaugh did the same with Michigan when he was at Stanford. Mike Hart called him out. And who's Jim Harbaugh's right-hand man right now at Michigan? Mike Hart. So if Marcus Freeman's the head coach at Ohio State in a few years, which I could possibly see happening if things go well, who is to say that this will not be dead by then?
And if you're Marcus Freeman, this is exactly the recruiting ground you should be at. This should be your territory. Like, that is, you want to differentiate yourself from Ohio State in a positive way. You're not pointing to wins and losses right now as a differentiator. Even that's what Ohio State would do for their recruiting pitch. If you're Notre Dame, you sort of pitch the Ivy League education, Power Five football. That's not recruiting territory for Ohio State. That's not what Ohio State is there to do. So I get it. Marcus Freeman makes a pretty compelling case from my point of view about how when he came to Notre Dame, he just like sort of had his eyes open to like a different way of doing things, and that has resonated with him. So I think it's one of the reasons Notre Dame is recruiting so well, is because Marcus Freeman sort of authentically sells that perspective on what college football can be.
Back-to-back podcast where we're spending the opening talking about one of the two Big Ten flagship programs and their beef with Notre Dame.
Yes.
Michigan last week, Ohio State this week. They're going to fit right in if they get the NBC deal.
Exactly. Perhaps that's a segue into the fan survey. Because there, Big Ten was mentioned in passing in there. I think there are a few questions that we could probably chew on, but since we're talking about the Big Ten a little bit, I wanted to jump all the way down to towards the bottom, where I sort of imagined a college football world, and I should have phrased this better, but like where USC, UCLA, Stanford, Washington, Oregon, Pittsburgh, Boston College, they joined the Big Ten. Clemson, Miami, Florida State joined the SEC. I should have added like those two super conferences are so exclusive they don't schedule anyone else, essentially like cutting off Notre Dame's inventory for scheduling and likely the postseason. What do you think Notre Dame should do? Half of the respondents said stay independent, just sort of keep fighting that fight. But more than 40% said join the Big Ten. Less than 10% said join the SEC. Is that sort of how you would have thought the temperature of the Notre Dame fan base would read in these turbulent college football times?
So with the way the question was phrased, I'm surprised more didn't say no, remain independent, because reading the question, yeah, it wouldn't be clear to me that, mm-hmm. oh, by the way, you're boxed out from playing the 30 or so biggest programs, maybe 40 or so biggest programs in the country. If that were the case, I'd say no, remain independent. If it means you can't play any of them, I'd say join the Big Ten. I think that's a pretty easy decision in an either-or context. I mean, they just fit in better there. Geographically, even, like, it's not like you're limiting yourself to the Midwest in this scenario, right? You're still playing USC. You're playing Oregon, BC, Pittsburgh, Washington. I think that's, again, in an either-or context, I think joining the Big Ten there is pretty rational.
So I think the other question that kind of I was curious how people reacted, because I tried to phrase it in a way that it made you be like, I know what I want to answer, but I'm not sure that I should. Is Notre Dame football better off or worse off today than it was immediately after the win at Stanford, which forces the reader to sort of put themselves mentally back in a space they were on Thanksgiving weekend last November, at which point Notre Dame was in position to make the college football playoff. Recruiting felt like it was on a bit of an uptick. You had a very young up-and-coming offensive and defensive coordinator, and you had a really talented roster potentially turning next year, and you might even still make the playoff. Were you interested in sort of the disparity in answers there? Because it was 91.6% said Notre Dame is better off today with a first-time head coach who's 0-1 than the program's all-time winningest coach who just left for LSU. Only 8.4% said Notre Dame is worse off.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was as wide of a gap as it was. I'm not surprised the majority said better. And again, this is a question that will answer itself over the course of time. I do think, like, as wholly unsatisfying, if you will, that the Brian Kelly – like, as successful as the Brian Kelly era was, there was a maybe self-imposed ceiling there, right? Like, I just don't think
– he talked about
Notre
it.
Dame, right, I don't think Notre Dame fans ever thought he was going to win a national championship. even the most optimistic of them. And look, maybe Marcus Freeman's terrible, and everyone looks like idiots answering 91% better. We don't know. We'll eventually find out. But I think that possibility of something more being out there, which at least on the recruiting trail shows us that there is so far, it gets people excited. I mean, different like comparison example, but like I remember we did the show, I think, in 2019 after the Michigan loss, and I feel like our mentions and our respondents on the pod were all like, fire Brian Kelly and hire Urban Meyer. He's available. And I'm just like, no, like that's not going to happen. But I get the point, right? It's like, even though this guy blows games every year and is kind of a disaster in his own right, like we'd at least be able to compete for a national championship, which we're clearly not doing right now, despite all the good things we're doing. I think when you look at the infrastructure of the program is coming off the run of 10 win seasons as they are right now, having a similar roster and having a staff that is proving that you can improve that roster, if not coach it up better, there's definitely optimism. And again, it's the Kirk Ferentz 10-year rule, right? Like everyone likes you 10% less after every year. And the hope, if you're an old head like Kirk Ferentz or Pat Fitzgerald or Bob Stoops or whoever, is once you get to year 10, that clock starts back at zero. Didn't exactly work out that way for Brian Kelly. I think it continued to decrease by maybe not 10%, but 7% or so.
Even though they were winning 10 games and making
even though they were winning 10 games a year. And now there's a sense of, okay, we have another level to reach to here, which, again, me and you have talked about this a lot, about the possibility of that. And we're seeing at least off the field right now happen in real time.
I mean, that was the recruiting question. The last couple of years, I'd sort of asked, you know, is Notre Dame recruiting well enough to win a national championship? It was roughly 30% yes, 70% no. This year, I asked, can Notre Dame recruit well enough to win a national championship? 92% yes, 8% no. That is a big shift. I also think it was probably a well-timed question for the yes, because they just gotten a five-star quarterback. But that is still a big shift. And I think it's reasonable for the first time to look at Notre Dame's recruiting operation and feel like, yeah, that's an operation that can win in the college football playoff. I'm not saying that it can win two games in the college football playoff or win four games or however many the sport is set up in 5-6 years, but that is a big change in perception. I think it's to me probably a more justified swing than, is Notre Dame better off or worse off today than it was in November?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's at 91, because again, it's only been 6 months now of the new regime. And again, I think it's gone recruiting wise probably as well as you could possibly draw it up so far. But even, you know, early on, or even if Dante Moore doesn't go to Notre Dame or whatever, I feel like there's always that segment of like, well, this is why we could ever do this, or this is among the fan base, not
right
among the coaching staff. but I mean, again, that this question kind of answered itself, right? I mean, it was a probably full offseason long storyline when back in 2019, Brian Kelly unsolicited said, I think we can one day be a top five recruiting operation. It was like, whoa, how are you going to do that,
Brian? I asked the question that got the response. It was the day before the Camping World Bowl, yeah, at just like a media scrum. And I was like, all right, well, thank you for writing my entire offseason of content here, BK.
But then COVID happened, and then this happened. Like, there was always an excuse. And I'm not saying some of them weren't legitimate, but
it was just such a departure from when I also pressed him on recruiting, like, 3 years earlier on signing day in February of 2017. And like, we sort of got into like an awkward back and forth about, you know, hey, what I asked him, like, do you think next year's recruiting can be better? Because it seems like you've got a good recruiting staff. That's when they brought Chip Long in. You know, Reese was back, and he's like, well, I don't know what you're trying to imply. Like, or he said, this class isn't very good. I'm like, no, like it seems like you have better recruiters. And now Elko was here, Clark Lee was here. It seems like you're going to have a full year to recruit with these guys opposed to just 6 weeks. And it's like, oh, you know, we've got our distinctions, 10, you know, we're usually between 10 and 15th. That's the blah, blah, blah. And we're like, all right. And I think the college football consumer's perception of recruiting has changed so much just in those 6 years. Like, no one, like when Dan Mullen sort of went down that path at Florida, it was like, you're done. Forget it.
Yep.
You can't say that about recruiting anymore. But I think it's, you know, now you have a head coach. I think it's just like he's got a permanent default setting of like recruiting 10 out of 10 importance at all times. And that's a big change.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The one answer I got to highlight here, you have the open-ended question number four. How would you sum up the Brian Kelly era?
There were some good ones.
The one you printed was great. I'd like to hear the other ones, but let's just repeat the other one. The name's not included here, but you said the Kelly era was also ripe for similes, including these gems, quote, like a business hotel, clean, professional, organized, even a little glossy, but ultimately a little soulless and forgettable. Like trying to date a girl you met on Tinder. It's going to be fun and memorable at times, but in the end, it's just not as fulfilling as you had hoped. A lot like eating at Notre Dame's dining hall. When you start satisfying what you need at the time, but the shtick gets old after a while and you're ready for a change of pace, preferably of a little higher quality. Like Game of Thrones. Overall great, but ended disappointment. End quote. I don't think the Ohio State fan survey has responses that are this eloquent, Pete.
No. No, they don't.
They're not mailing in the middle of their online classes to Ari and Bill about hotel comparisons. Well, I'm sure you can go down a rabbit hole and admire that one.
When you have 2,500 respondents writing something in and you have to read all of them, it's hard to stand out. So I give these a lot of credit because I literally laughed out loud at my laptop as I was scrolling through these. The business hotel was my favorite one because I was like, you know, I never really thought of it that way before. And I was like, that is pretty much perfect. That's I think Brian Kelly, he's not a Courtyard by Marriott, but like he's definitely not a JW either.
He's a Renaissance. We'll give him that.
Yes. Aspiring to be a Westin.
I've seen him at the St. Regis, which I believe is now a Bonvoy property, but I don't know if I'd put him in that category.
Not in the athletic travel budget at all.
Number five, if Notre Dame hadn't promoted Marcus Freeman, the next coach should have been. I don't think there are any surprises here. Fickell dominated, Matt Campbell distant number two, Tommy Restere, Meyer four, Nick Saban five, Clark Lee six. Anything stand out to you in that one?
It got edited out of my answer, but I was shocked about how many ways there are to spell Fickell, because it was a write-in vote. There was like F-I-C-H-E-L, F-I-C-E-L. I mean, somebody called him Luca Fickell. Like, it was really all over the board. I think it was one of those where the size of the majority surprised me. That Luke Fickell was the runaway winner, just the fact that he had what 15 times as many votes as number two. The fact that 38 people were still voting for Urban Meyer, I think the 30 votes for Nick Saban were a joke.
What about people, the six for you?
Yeah, the six for me, I appreciated.
Twice as many as Ted Lasso. Congratulations. Yeah,
I also toward the bottom, it was like, how can Notre Dame improve its football program without getting away from its values? Somebody actually did write in that there should be a statue of me outside the stadium making the prediction that Iowa State was going to win the Camping World Bowl. So, yeah, it was...
Were there any write-ins for anyone else on last year's staff?
There was not. No Brian Polian, Mike Elston flyers slept in there at the end. So, yeah, it's, I think just the – and I mean, I agree, Luke Fickell. In the same way that Michael Mayer should dominate your favorite player on the team, I was just surprised about how there was almost unanimous opinion.
Mayer's like the best player. That's indisputable. Like, right. The coaching thing's more open-ended. I mean, I'm not surprised by these. I mean, I'm surprised by the margin. It's interesting because, like, Fickell – Notre Dame, from my understanding, at least made contact with the agents of 8 other potential candidates in that 3-day gap or so between Brian Kelly leaving and Marcus Freeman being promoted. Some of the people I talked to whose agents had been contacted were of the belief this was Notre Dame just doing their due diligence. Yeah. And it wasn't – I wouldn't say it's not a real search because it was a real search, but like – There were people who didn't bother to get involved because they did not think they had a chance because it was going to be Marcus Freeman the whole way. Some of those names are on that list among the answers. But, they pretty much covered it all. Al Golden, actually, that was a surprising one just because, he was kind of out of sight, out of mind in the college football world until he just came back to Notre Dame as far as the people receiving votes. Lincoln Riley's also surprising because he took the USC job, I think, before Brian Kelly left Notre Dame.
That's how people are just sick of Brian Kelly at that point, I guess. I don't know, those 22 people or so.
Number 10 is another one I had circled. We already talked over it at number 10. Number 17 was another one I had circled. What best describes your feelings toward NIL? Majority, 47.6%, said don't care. I appreciate the candor here because as many kind of fun one day storylines, and in the case of Jimbo and Nick, week long storylines we've gotten out of this. I feel like you can't talk about NIL these days without saying, oh, it's a wild, wild west. And oh my God, what's going to happen? It's not going to change Joe fans viewing pleasure on Saturdays.
Yeah. I didn't hear one person complain about Kyle Hamilton's NIL work when he made the second pick at Florida State on Labor Day weekend last year. It's just I struggle with this question was not well articulated, and in the sense of there's way more nuance to how you can or should feel about NIL than just love it, hate it. It's fine. But I just want to get a pulse of what camp you would be if you had to choose one of those three camps. And I often struggle with are we writing too much about NIL? It seems important, but sometimes I feel like fans in general really don't care at all. It's like a sports business story and they rather read about sports.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously it's very important behind the scenes as far as how people are operating day to day, but I think the bottom line, it's the good teams are still going to be good. The bad teams are probably still going to be bad. And that's that. Now, timing's everything, right? If Notre Dame didn't get CJ Carr and let's say Dante Moore committed elsewhere next week or last week when you asked this, I'm willing to bet the answers would have been a little bit different. Right. And I think that's how it's going to play out recruit to recruit, year to year, fan base to fan base. I'm sure Pittsburgh feels really badly about NIL right now.
Yeah, much different perception.
Even though Kenny Pickett and even Addison last year had some deals locally there. I think it's just another, at least from the fan base point of perspective, it's another leg to the already weird world of college football recruiting. It's one more layer to say our academics may be better than yours, but you're paying your players more than we're paying ours. It's just one more thing to kind of get upset about when things don't go your way.
I think that's where I'm starting to settle on NIL too, where it's just it's a piece of the puzzle, but I think too often in the last year, it's been presented in stories and media and podcasts and whatever as the whole puzzle. This is the whole damn thing, NIL. I don't know if you were in this conversation at our conference in Scottsdale, but we were talking about NIL and how it changes how you evaluate whether a guy's a good recruiter or not. And I think we have some people on our staff who feel like it's the only thing that matters. It's just like, it's just a competing checkbook. And I'm like, I don't really feel that way. I think that Notre Dame's recruiting success suggests that that is not true. That NIL is not the whole thing. It's just another thing to evaluate when you're looking at schools. And that's fine.
I think, yeah, it depends on the individual, right? Like, I think the idea of the million-dollar recruiter, right? Not every staff, but a lot of staffs have hired recruiters, right? They get assistant coaching job at whatever because they're good at getting players. I think the market for that's going to go way down because that just – I mean, you still need to recruit. Obviously, we've seen it with Notre Dame. Like, being a good recruiter helps you get good recruits. But there's more to the picture now than just charming high school kids. I mean – you know, talking to people connected to Brian Kelly and people at LSU, you know, as much as we laugh and even, you know, look at the survey and can see the fan base's reaction to his shortcomings as a recruiter, there's a sense down there that because the guy is so savvy off the field and because LSU has their NIL thing figured out better than a majority of schools, like Brian Kelly, I wouldn't go so far as to say he's going to be a great recruiter overnight, but I think this world with him as a head coach down there is better tailored to his strengths than going out coast to coast recruiting players on behalf of Notre Dame pre-NIL era. We'll see how that plays out. I touched on this a little bit of a story I had today, but I do appreciate the honesty of some places, particularly Miami right now, which like their boosters have not been shy about what they're doing. And maybe it's gotten them in hot water, the NCAA. I don't know. John Aries had a meeting with them last week. But like Mario Cristobal last month at ACC spring meetings, I mean, every coach is just afraid of saying the wrong thing and afraid to touch all these moving parts publicly. But, you know, I don't know. It's a complicated world. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't want to talk. Like Dabo Swinney did not talk to us down there. Mario Cristobal comes out and he's just like, you got to change the way you're coaching guys because they might transfer. Then you were doing it wrong to begin with. Like, he's like, you think he's like, I went to Miami. I was poor. I couldn't afford the championship t-shirts that they were giving us when we won two of them. You think I'm going to complain about NIL now that I'm making millions of dollars to coach there and the players are now going to be able to benefit off that? No, like he's like, it's another layer to already complicated job. And if you're good, you'll figure it out. And again, when Miami's been good, they figured that part of it out and now it's all above water. So I appreciate the kind of transparency and openness schools like that have had during this, whereas you've got the pearl clutching of Jimbo Fisher saying they're coming to A&M because we're great at academics, blah, 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 you know, or whatever it is. Or Nick Saban saying, oh, my God, how dare A&M buy a recruiting class? It's again, I think the market will eventually decide how this all plays out. I did get a kick out of there being an NIL convention in Atlanta this week with NIL experts, which are probably the same like dozens of randoms that are emailing me, you and everyone else in the media saying we're here to talk about this deal. And it's like, all right, who are you?
You know the market that nobody else seems to know? Okay.
Exactly.
Good to know.
Exactly. I mean, I love like the injury experts we get all the time. Like, I saw you cover Kyle Hamilton. This doctor specializes in the injury he had, and he can talk to you and provide you quotes about, yeah, no, thank you.
Pinched fat pads. all sorts of good stuff there. I don't know if there was anything else that like jumped. I appreciated that the Notre Dame fan base is sort of maybe more on our side of the Tommy Rees. What do you think? Like, I think we're both fairly high on him as a coach and where his career is going. 91% said the last 2 years have been stock up for him. 8.9% said stock down. I think most of these answers were filed before CJ Carr committed. So I don't think it's unnaturally inflated by some recruiting success. And then
three different answers that had 91%, by the way.
Yeah.
Very random.
I have a straight ticket vote happening here for some people. And then if Notre Dame could change one thing about its football program but remain true to its values, what would you change? I was shocked how many people noted or mentioned like lowering admission standards, because I think that's like actually an invalidated option. Like I should have
right.
Somehow you should not have been able to type that, because that actually does cut against the values. But you know, I think transfers and facilities, those are two places, particularly the facilities, where Notre Dame can invest and still be, air quotes, Notre Dame. Like, I don't think you are getting away from what you want to be in terms of your principles there by building the new Goog or investing in baseball facilities, which is a kind of a topical thing around here right now.
Yeah, that was a question I was going to come to. I would have said facilities one for the same reason you mentioned, like it's doable and it's nothing, like it's the easiest answer, right? Here's where we can upgrade and we can do it by putting money into it and infrastructure into it. And it's not going to take anything away from any other part of what makes this university special.
Right.
Whereas and I would put transfers too, and I'm not even saying transfers, like, I think there's a concession, at least on the university side, that needs to be made for that to happen, even though I don't necessarily agree with it.
That's an issue of process, not right. An issue of who you're letting in. It's can you get the answer on Brandon Joseph same day opposed to waiting 2 weeks? That's where Notre Dame needs to move on transfers. I think that most of Notre Dame fans sort of understand just because you're in the transfer portal and you got into college, that has really very little to do with whether you could get into Notre Dame as a transfer. But Notre Dame adjusting its transfer policy in terms of how they admit it, who's eligible, somewhat. I think that's significant. That can still be Notre Dame being Notre Dame.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's one question that's not on here that I wish you asked. Who do you think the next broadcast team on NBC should be?
Should be?
Yes.
Should be. I mean, if, should be. I would. Here's what I feel on this. Like, I don't think Notre Dame needs to have the same broadcast team for every game. I think that when you play Clemson or Ohio State or USC, that you can figure out have Mike Tirico come in and do that. You can have an A broadcaster for an A game. For Marshall or UNLV, then I think that you can sort of open up that a little bit. I think pretty highly of the work that Paul Burmeister does. If you want to keep it in-house and do something kind of simple, I think that would be a route you could take. However, my sources seem to indicate that Jack Collinsworth and Jason Garrett are not just leaders in the clubhouse to be the NBC booth, but like almost a certainty, to the point where I was told, like, I don't know why they're waiting to announce this. So that's not where I would go. I think that sort of a more experienced voice, certainly in the play-by-play role, would be significant and helpful for Notre Dame, but we shall see. Matt, how would you answer that question?
They didn't announce yet because they wanted to see the fan reaction, and you botched it by not including them in your in your survey. Clearly,
these 2,500 votes will tip the scales.
I have
of Notre
not
Dame.
Watched a single USFL game, which I believe those two are on together, right?
They both do them. They're not. Yes. They both are doing USFL games.
Okay.
Correct.
I have not watched it. That said. I think if you promoted the current radio team to the TV team, there'd be not a single person of rational mind who would push back, because I think very highly of guests Paul Burmeister and Ryan Harris.
And it would fit in the Shamrock Bump.
There we go. I think Pete and Matt would be great on NBC. like to see the write-in votes on that one. Going from Mike Tirico to anyone – is just almost unfair. Like,
oh yeah, it's brutal.
Like I think you texted me this. We're watching him separately hand out the Super Bowl trophy this year on TV on NBC. And I think you said, texted something along the lines of, do you think it goes through his mind, the next football game I'm doing involves Marshall? Like, going from the Super Bowl to this. Like, and I think that's, with all due respect to Marshall, a very, like, perspective-filled commentary that shows you, like, how big and nice it is for Notre Dame to have, like, the elite of the elite calling their games on play-by-play. Like, that's just,
I feel like,
I think part,
like, they've punched above their weight for quite a while with,
I mean, Mike Tom Hanley, like, again, like, I'm not, all these guys have been, these are guys calling, like, NBA Finals games, you know what I mean? Like, they're not doing, like, you know, curling or whatever in their free time. Like, these are, like, the height of the height as far as American professional broadcasting. So, I just think when you think of Notre Dame on NBC, like, look, they're not getting rich off this deal, right? Like, financially, you'd make more money going to a conference. It's about the prestige. It's about having your exclusive window. It's about having, a level of certainty and a home team announcer, if you will, that no other program in college football can have. And when you have Mike Tirico as it, it's pretty damn good. I would probably promote the radio guys and find some alums to fill in on the radio side. The guy who did that, Tony something, apologies,
Simeone,
did basketball this year.
Yeah, I thought you did a nice job with that.
You could put him on the radio team, and, you know, I'm not diminishing what an important job it is, but there's no shortage of alums, Notre Dame alums in media right now who would be very good at radio color about their alma mater.
I mean, look, for like a Brady Quinn, I think a Brady Quinn, Paul Burmeister booth with Simeone and Harris on radio would be good. That, you know, there are contractual obligations that will stop that from happening.
Well, Brady's your point, right? Brady has a better job right now.
Yeah, he does. I think that, you know, Notre Dame is obviously very near and dear to his heart. I think that he would think long and hard about it, but, he's got a good gig right now. It's difficult to feel, Phil, because you're like, who wants to do just six or seven games? This is where, like, if NBC added the Big Ten down the road, I think you would have a better stable of announcers to call upon, because then Notre Dame would have, it'd be an A game or a B game or a C game based on the opponent. You'd have just more people to rely on. And I don't think that, having the same announcers every week is, like, I don't understand why that has to be the case.
I think it's nice when you're on NBC by yourself right now. Now, I wrote this today too, like, if NBC were to get a Big Ten deal, when I first heard that back in February, I think when Sports Business Journal wrote it, I thought, wow, like, Notre Dame's going to lose their exclusive network. but I've had folks in Notre Dame tell me, like, no, like, that's going to be great for us because it's just going to elevate our brand even more. We'll get more money. We'll essentially be a Big Ten property financially without having any of the obligations of actually joining the Big Ten. It's win-win. And yes, I mean, if you've got a day-night doubleheader or whatever it is with a primetime game and an afternoon game, yeah, there's going to be multiple sets of announcers, and I'm assuming NBC would hire more people for just that. I mean, I think the fact that we're having, I wouldn't say trouble, but coming up with set sure names, even if I guess the radio guys are sure names, but shows you that it's, like, not the easiest job. But I don't know, like, to go with an experienced duo for the first year of the Marcus Freeman regime, while you're also trying to land the Big Ten and show them you're serious about expanding your college football coverage, that's a choice.
It's hilarious to me that we, a conversation of who can replace Mike Tirico and Drew Brees is much more difficult than, like, who can replace Jack Swarbrick. Like, we have an easier time finding AD candidates than NBC announcers. So I agree with you. Like, it would have been very cool from, like, a sort of synergistic point of view to have Tirico and Brees do it again in Freeman's first year, because the energy around Notre Dame right now and the interest around Notre Dame is very high, very elevated. I think probably higher than at any point it was, you know, during Brian Kelly's tenure, short of, like, November of 2012. And so to be able to tap into that and take advantage of that, if you're NBC, I think that would have been a smart business decision. I understand why it's not easy to do. There's a lot of other competing factors there, but I mean, it's even like, something as piddly as my fan survey. Like last year, 1,500 people submitted it. This year, 2,500 people submitted it. Right. Why is that? The reason is Marcus Freeman. There's just a lot more interest in where Notre Dame football is going right now than there has been in some time.
Well, and this hasn't gone to the college level yet, although I'm sure eventually will because it's a copycat business. Look at the salaries for football play-by-play people and color analysts now. Like in this last year alone, like everyone has reshuffled the deck, right? Like,
yeah,
Buck and Aikman are going to ABC. Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit are going to Amazon. I think CBS is the only one that's stayed constant. I mean, that's a choice to make as far as how much money you want to devote to a product that you're only airing seven times a year. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Bring Vern Lundquist out of retirement for seven games a year. Like, is that possible? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of state he's in right now or how he's enjoying retirement life. But I just think there's a way to commit to it without breaking the bank, if that makes sense. Because it's
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's not that big of a commitment from a time on the calendar perspective.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's there's going to be an interesting offseason storyline to follow. Although, like, if Notre Dame is recruiting top 100 prospects, I'm not sure how many Notre Dame fans are even going to notice until like the Marshall game kicks off and be like, what happened to Chirico? Where did he go?
There's going to be a Peacock game, right? I assume.
One would think, could you really put the first home game of the Marcus Freeman era on
UNLV?
It's got to be UNLV. Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one.
So, well, they're in the baseball business now, right? They've got 10:30 a.m. or 11:30 a.m. Sunday games, I think, with Jason Benetti, who's, for my money, the best play-by-play announcer in baseball. So you can make – put Benetti do Benetti for Notre Dame.
Yeah, why not? I mean
– he already does college football.
But suddenly we've got all these solutions.
There we go.
Let's roll with it. So, all right. Well, we'll wrap up this episode of the Shamrock on hypothetical announcer pairings. Thanks for listening.
Shout out baseball. They're playing Texas.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, yeah, Notre Dame baseball plays Friday night against Texas. I had a baseball story on our humble The Athletic website today. Talked to Paul Maneri, former Notre Dame baseball coach, who led Notre Dame to the College World Series. And then a few years later, decamped for LSU, where he made the College World Series, I think, five times, won a title, finished runner-up once. So it's sort of a set of circumstances that current Notre Dame coach Link Jarrett may be forced to deal with Florida State, which is his alma mater, and sort of a national power in a way Notre Dame baseball isn't, because it's in part it's located in the South. So that it was an educational story to write, and I think that Notre Dame baseball it's a great story. I mean, their upset of Tennessee last weekend, barring something crazy happening on September 3rd, will be like the result of the season of the calendar year in Notre Dame athletics.
Not to push back on that, but when going on the other non-football side, when you think of Mexican breakfast foods, you obviously think of Mike Bray first.
Okay. I was like, where is this going?
Mike Bray, who spent quite some time in Delaware, now has the Starboard Diner in Starboard Restaurant Bar, I'm sorry, in Dewey Beach, Delaware, has posted that Mike Bray, who's smiling in front of a picture, one of those light up Natter Days, Natty Light signs, has his own burrito. It says, get your head in the game and try the Bray-rito. And if you zoom in, it actually looks pretty good, Pete. Resident coach Mike Bray of Notre Dame men's basketball suggests athletes start their day with a great breakfast, just as he does here at the Starboard. Hence, this creation of scrambled eggs wrapped up with bacon, sausage, or scrapple, cheddar, and jack cheeses, fresh pico de gallo, served with our awesome homemade hash browns for $12. I don't know. Maybe baseball will be the result of this season, but Mike Bray is the one who's living his best life in Notre Dame in 2022.
That breakfast definitely comes through choice of coffee, orange juice,
or Natter
or beer. All right. On that note, we're going to wrap up this episode of the Shamrock. He's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to everybody who took the Notre Dame fan survey. If you have suggestions for questions next year, you can drop them in the comments. But appreciate everyone reading, participating, all that good stuff. So until we return, probably next week, we'll eventually get around to that live show. He's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.